Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Jake, we could talk about a lot of things, but I need to know, is there any update on R-Truth? Is he en route to Los Angeles? Is he going to be trapped for 6 days in that crate? Will anyone notify somebody, or are we waiting 6 days from now for a famished, dehydrated R-Truth to be let out of a crate due to the incompetence of the emergency team at WWE to solve this this very important crisis?
Nobody even drilled any holes in his case. He's probably going to run out of air sometime between now and then, I guess, is what they led you to believe. But yeah, I some of the 24/7 stuff is comical, but I've come to the conclusion that it's just not for me. Like, I don't get the same kick out of it that other people do.
I thought this started to take things a little too far to the point of, and it sounds so weird because it's been ridiculous from start to finish, but like, I thought this was a little too ridiculous. And so I'm having to kind of recalibrate whether I'm okay with how different this universe is from the rest of the universe. But then I think, like, for instance, what are the odds of Jinder Mahal showing up just as Truth was locked in a crate, but Carmella just happened to have to go to the ring for her match? And I can't believe I'm analyzing this, but I have to, because good promoters, good bookers have to think about this stuff. How do we explain what happens in a way that seems realistic? WWE is so sloppy about this in so many different ways that I feel sort of hypocritical to critique the 24/7 division and say that they have to hold themselves to a higher standard. Not hypocritical. Why would I expect that to happen with here when I've been frustrated with it not happening on the main roster where it actually counts more? But this was just too much. It's too much of a challenge for me to separate the idea that a camera just happens to be filming this and we're watching and it's supposed to be funny. But I think we're headed towards Truth banging on a crate on Raw on Monday. And we're going to be in this alternate universe we're supposed to take seriously, seriously with quotes to a degree, around other things like Ziggler trying to take a championship from Kofi with a cage to keep out interference. And there's going to be a referee and pinfalls or submissions or escaping a cage. There's a set of rules. But I think Monday, Jake, we're going to see Truth showing up in a crate and being uncrated after being locked in there for 6 days. Like, are we not? I don't know that I can barely deal with Jinder Mahal just happening to show up when Truth gets locked in the crate. But now am I going to have to deal with that? It you can have fun with this title and be sort of over the top, but I think you have to either be more over the top in a different lane or less over the top if you're in the same arena that everything else is happening in. So that's kind of where I am. I thought this week went a little too far.
I actually thought the WWE having access to the live elevator cam was just as bad, from Monday's Raw.
Yeah.
So, I can't say that this is, a degree worse. I guess it's just what I've come to expect from this particular division is that they want it to be silly and ridiculous, and there seems to be an audience for it. I pay attention to to WWE related hashtags on Twitter, and there are a sizable number of people that enjoy it. But certainly, if you're somebody who wants to take the show seriously and wants it to have a framework and a set of rules that apply universally to the entire show, it completely blows up that concept, and you just kind of either have to accept it or it's going to drive you crazy.
By the way, as a side note, I gave WWE credit for making the camera black and white, grainy, and at an angle that appeared like it was happening, that it was being filmed from a corner security camera in an elevator. I gave them credit for that because I wouldn't have put it past them to have like three camera angles and, and an invisible fourth wall that they were shooting from in full color. Like, they have these arbitrary lines that they draw in terms of creating that framework, the internal logic, the structure. They have these, they just arbitrarily break it left and right. It's just amateur hour, the way that they create their show. It's just stuff like wrestlers standing sideways facing the camera watching TV because some idiot in WWE, some smart, good person in WWE with an idiotic idea, let me reframe that, thinks that people won't recognize a wrestler if they're standing sideways and we see their profile watching TV. So they have to unnaturally stand facing the camera while looking peripherally or sideways at a TV screen. It's stupid. The same way it's stupid when wrestlers look into a mirror, quote, at themselves, but they're actually looking into the camera, where everyone at home is going, why are they looking through a mirror into the camera filming them? Why aren't they looking at themselves? But there's some really good, smart person who is with this idiotic idea that people will be confused if someone looks into a camera, like last night, Lacey Evans, and they are not seeing their eyes make contact with them on the TV screen. Like, they're just low IQ, idiotic stuff that drives me nuts. But I gave them credit, at least in the elevator, for grainy black and white footage, even though, yes, it creates a sense of this Orwellian fear that WWE actually is tracking their wrestlers, even in an elevator, to see everything that they do and every tweet that they make. So that was stupid, but I do think it's I will defend, not defend. Well, I guess I'm defending. I'll defend my argument that it is a giant step further that we're to believe R-Truth might end up locked in a crate for 6 days and survive. Rant over.
And the you know, is it airtight? Probably not. I mean, hopefully he can, you know, they want us to believe that he can actually breathe in there. But the part that stuck out to me is you had the forklift operator who was wearing ear protection. So it's like plausible that he wouldn't have heard Truth thrashing around. But
yeah.
Carmella was standing like 25 feet away. Like, there's no chance she didn't hear him pounding around inside that case. And she's sitting there like a doe in the headlights. It was bizarre that she couldn't hear him.
So the question is, and this is a serious question, does this undercut other things they're trying to do? Because if it's all in fun, and we just sort of have an artistic disagreement with its execution, and but there's enough people out there who are like, it's fun, and, you know, it's wrestling. I mean, we don't take it that seriously, even though what draws money is when fans do get immersed in it, and they do take it seriously. But that aside, is this enough of a sideshow, and it's enough clearly comedy in its own track? It's not hurting other stuff. So even if it's not for you, if it's for enough people and it doesn't affect everything else they're doing, maybe it's a net gain. But the question for you is it actually so implausible that it actually is undercutting the rest of the show as presented?
I don't think it completely dismantles the rest of the show, but I think where it could become a problem is where you want people to transition in and out of this comedy division, and then it's like, okay, now I have to take this guy seriously again, and I don't know how you make that transition, particularly when they do have a mid-card that does want to be taken seriously that's already really struggling. And so I think it's defining people into this category, and then how do you get people out of it? And then if you want to move somebody new into it, does that automatically, you know, prevent them from transitioning back if they ever want to get to that level? And so that's the part that kind of bothers me. It's like, Truth, he's been a comedy act for a long time, but now there's zero chance that I will ever see Jinder Mahal as anything but a comedy guy.
Which I'm celebrating quietly.
Well, that's...
But yeah.
Yeah. But, and I guess, you know, they haven't really moved anybody with any significant star power into the 24/7 division, aside from, you know, Elias's brief run with it a week ago. But, you know, it's going to be tough if they, you know, Mick Foley talked about legends and you know, significant stars sometimes challenging for this thing. And I don't know how you make that seem anything but ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think anyone who's part of it now, I mean, we you know, WWE plows through so many implausibilities and kind of, you know, I don't know, low IQ moments, amateur hour moments, and they just plow through and they think they're not damaged by it. And they just, you know, sometimes we'll just start treating somebody completely different than they did before. And they just ask fans to erase their heck, you know, Kevin, have we ever had any explanation for Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn their reconciliation or apparent reconciliation?
I mean, other than Kevin Owens turned heel,
on
the New Day, that was really we were just supposed to assume that that was the inflection point for them coming back together.
Yeah. So, you know, there's just things where they're like, Vince doesn't think people remember, or Vince doesn't really remember, or they decide it's not worth explaining because they're just this juggernaut that has to move forward and not look back. But just one of those things. Anyway, sort of like last night's show, we could have started in a lot of places with this show, but I wanted to start with R-Truth's condition. I'm more worried about Truth than I am Cesaro last night. Fortunately, Cesaro looks like he'll be fine, but R-Truth I'm still worried about. So let's hit the table and introduce the program. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show following The Tuesday, June 11th, 2019 edition of WWE SmackDown, which aired live on USA Network in front of what might be a record low audience for a non-holiday show based on Raw's ratings last night with under 2 million people watching the third hour of Raw. Yes, there was that Raptors-Warriors game going on, but WWE's faced stiff competition before and hasn't dropped below that 2 million mark. So that's not good. So I'll be keeping an eye out for SmackDown ratings, and you can check out pwtorch.com for that update on Wednesday. My co-host today is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net. And Jake, it's great to have you back. I'm glad you're here this week to talk about tonight's SmackDown.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Jake, tell people how they can hear more from you and social media and in terms of website and podcast.
Yeah, so you can find weekly podcasts from myself and Jason Powell over at ProWrestling.net on the members side of things. I also do the weekly SmackDown report along with Wade at the Torch on his side of things. And also you can find me on Twitter at Barnett Jake, and I spend the vast majority of my time talking wrestling on that account.
There's people who come on the show like, you can follow me on Twitter, but I don't talk much wrestling on it. So good to have somebody plugging their Twitter who talks about wrestling on it. And so let's give out the phone numbers and hopefully we get more callers. I messed up at the beginning of the show and had I had the show starting an hour later. I just set the time wrong, so I had to redo it and then redo the links. And I think there's some people trying to get to the original link. So if you did find the live streaming link, congratulations. I apologize if you had to download the show later and try to catch our live stream. That might limit our callers a little bit tonight. Hopefully not. But if you are listening to us, we encourage you to call. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad, and that will indicate that you want to be on the show. So after calling, push 1 on your keypad to indicate you want to join the conversation and contribute your thoughts on tonight's SmackDown. Let's start taking calls. I got a lot more I want to talk about on today's show. Obviously, the 24/7 thing isn't the be-all, end-all in terms of tonight's episode of SmackDown, but so we have a number of other topics covered, but we'll let the callers lead the way, and we'll go to 440 first. 440, thank you for calling. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, hey guys, it's Brian from Cleveland. How are you guys?
Doing good. Brian with a B?
Oh, no, Ryan, R-Y-A.
Oh, Ryan, okay. I couldn't quite tell if I heard a B there or not. All right, cool. Thanks, Ryan. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, so, I mean, the first thing I wanted to talk about was the promo segment in the middle of the show with the New Day and then everyone interrupting.
Yeah.
And it's like, why have it? They're going to have the match in the last half hour of the show. Why not give, you know, Finn Balor or Ali or Chad Gable a chance to just go out and have a 15-minute match instead of having these guys cut the exact same promo they've been cutting for the last month for them to just come out a half hour later and have the match?
Well, I mean, I have mixed feelings on that. I'm with you, Ryan, on wanting to see the wrestlers you mentioned get TV time. But I also believe in having wrestlers talk about their match coming up on a TV show or also their match coming up at a pay-per-view. And I think the main event match was there to fill TV time and draw a rating, you know, or, you know, give viewers a reason to tune in so they can advertise all three members of New Day making their return, teaming together on SmackDown. So that match had a purpose there, and it gave them a chance to build a little heat up with Ziggler and Kofi in particular. But the promo was there to build up stomping grounds in the singles match in particular between them. So, I mean, I guess if you have a show that just all the segments are independent of one another, but you give wrestlers a wider array of wrestlers TV time, there's a plus to that. There's a positive side of ledger. A lot of different wrestlers are getting exposure, and you're not overexposing New Day, KO, Sammy, and Ziggler. But Jake, I mean, I root for WWE giving promo time to wrestlers before they have a match, and that is a co-main event of Stomping Grounds coming up in less than 2 weeks. So I think you need to have Kofi and Ziggler talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, they only have one more week of television until they go right back to pay-per-view. And so I think they had to give him a little bit of promo time here. And I think you have to look at where the promo was placed on the show. They clearly wanted the top of the second hour to be led off by, their main event talent. And so I understand the motivation there. I guess, there's always, and I sympathize with the argument that they need to get more people on the show, because I don't think they do a good enough job of getting variety. But, you take a look at that opening promo, for example. Like, did that really need to be 17 minutes? I don't think so. They could have gotten that done a lot quicker than they did. And so there's always going to be ways you can pick apart how things are timed out on the show. But I really didn't have an issue with the top of the hour promo in the second hour. I think the ironic thing was you had the heels taking exception with the fact that that Xavier Woods kicked Dolph Ziggler at the Super Showdown show that led to the finish, and then they spent the entire main event cheating and distracting the referee, which was a nice bit of irony there.
All right, let's go back to Ryan for any follow-up to that topic or a different topic.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you guys, and I get what you're saying, with the promo and building up the match and everything like that. But it just kind of felt unnecessary because it's been the same promo that they've been cutting, for so long. So, I won't harp too much on that. But I know one of the most recent things you guys have been talking about a lot lately is after the Moxley promo. So just a quick point on something that I noticed was, I don't know if you guys caught this in the Mandy Rose Ember Moon segment, the backstage segment, and this just ties in perfectly with everything that Moxley was saying, was I think Sonya Deville was the one who said to Ember, like, here's a superhero to idolize, and Ember goes, more like a super villain, and it's like, they just got to get these writers out of here.
Jake, as the show opened, and Miz is like, I have to read a script, and I'm like, they're like really sensitive to this Ambrose thing. There's a theory that the latest Firefly Funhouse is related to the Ambrose interview. People, I don't know if we're reading into it, and Vince doesn't even know what happened or isn't paying attention or what. But if I'm the writers, I'm wanting to produce my best content right now, because people are, I think, hyper aware of the scripted nature of things. So on a meta level, they're kind of joking about it. You even have Kofi doing a little thing about, that's booking, and Big E going, what's that all about? But so they're trying to do some kind of sneak in some meta stuff. Even Kevin Owens joking about wild card rule. I mean, what is that last night? But I would think the writers would be doing their best work. But at the same time, I imagine, there's some writers who are better than others in WWE. There's so many of them. We can't even track, who does what. On the outside, because there's such a turnover and so many of them. But if I'm the writers, I would be hyper aware right now of not writing really corny stuff for your own amusement or because it's clever, and trying to write dialogue that feels a little more realistic. I actually think they attempted that and it didn't quite work with Lacey and Becky last night, in the sense that when they talked over each other at the end of the promo, I think that was their way to make it feel unscripted, because we wouldn't script them talking over each other, but it ended up feeling kind of clunky and messy too. So, yeah, I Jake, your thoughts on what Ryan said and then what I added to it.
That backstage promo was pretty awkward. And I don't know if I want to blame it more on the writers or just the delivery of the people involved. I think there's some – there's two sides of that coin. You can have something written that's really good, and if somebody doesn't deliver it well, it comes across poorly. And of course, you can't really overcome having terrible material, which is a more prevalent problem. But the thing about Ember Moon and how bad that response was is, like, what could you write for Ember Moon that would come across naturally? We literally know nothing about her, and I think when you get down to the core of it, there's no character to reference to know whether or not she would say something like that, So I understand the argument, and I actually agree with it that and Moxley made an excellent case for, the writers getting in the way more often than not. But at the end of the day, I think you can't completely take away any responsibility for the quality of these promos from the performers. They have to do their part as well.
Ryan, anything else you want to add?
No. Thank you for taking the call. Long-time listener, first-time caller in, so thank you for taking the call.
A good time to call. We appreciate it, and hope to hear from you again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Excellent. Thanks. All right. Again, the number is 347-215-8558. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net. We're talking SmackDown, and up next is area code 708. That was like my radio reset. From the early 90s when I worked at KFAN. People can join the show midstream. You got to reset who you are and what you're talking about, what the phone number is. Anyway, 708, you are up next on the fan line, as they used to say. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Gentlemen, this is Vincent from Chicago.
Hey, Vincent, good to hear from you again. What's on your mind?
The previous caller talked about the New Day, the Ziggler, Owen, Sami Zayn segment in the middle of the show, and I couldn't help but notice there was some, in my opinion, there was some pretty overt racial overtones in that promo, especially when Sami came out. He had mentioned, so I mean, the first thing, it's obvious, it's three black guys and it's three white guys as, you know, at the heels. And then Sami in his part, he came out and he mentioned the word justice. I think about, unless I miscounted, I think I heard him mention justice three times. And that was in reference to Xavier kicking Dolph at Super Showdown. And not to go too political here, but in the news, we do see this quite often where, you know, let's say a black citizen will physically assault a white police officer. That may get some media coverage, but then there's, you know, let's say it's the other way around. Let's say it's a white officer physically assaults, a black citizen. And then there's outrage. There's, you know, that's the lead story on the news program. And that's what I kind of felt that this promo was hitting on, you know, Sami saying, oh, well, you guys don't care about justice. You guys just root for who you like, which, I mean, to use your term, Wade, there's some plausible deniability because, I mean, that's what fans do. They root for who they like. But I don't know if I'm overanalyzing it or were those racial overtones as prevalent as it was to me.
That's a great point. Jake, go ahead and respond first. What do you think about that? I tend to start asking questions, then I answer it before throwing. I'll throw it to you, Jake, and then I'll comment after that.
You know, it may be just me covering the show and having to, you know, actually sit there and then transcribe it as best I can. But I didn't pick up on it as much as you did. But hearing you explain it, I certainly think I understand how you could come to that conclusion. And I think Kofi's title reign, to an extent, has had those racial overtones from the beginning. I mean, they certainly told that story heading up to WrestleMania. And I don't think it's been as overt since then, but certainly, you know, you can read into it and pick those things up as you consume the content. I don't know if they were going for it overtly, but I think the subtext has always been there. And I didn't analyze it to the extent that you did, but I think there's, you know, now that you've explained it that way, I can certainly sympathize with that take. But I don't know if that's necessary, you know, just thinking about how they produce this show and you know, who the writers are and what their perspectives may be. I don't know. It's a tough thing to think about, you know, if they would have gone to the extent that you describe. But as somebody who's just watching it from afar, I think the themes are definitely there, whether they're intentional or not.
Yeah, I was looking at it as, in my mind, as I was watching, because I just have been trained watching Vince McMahon over the years, and I think rewarded with verification many, many times over the decades, actually, that there's things that are on television that are a window into Vince McMahon's mind. And I was thinking it was the promo might have a double meaning when it comes to Saudi Arabia, that, you know, people are being hypocritical, that the fans are willing to judge WWE going to Saudi Arabia because they don't like something about WWE or the McMahon family or whatever. And so they watch WWE, but they're jumping all over them for doing this, but they like their Apple phones, and Apple phones are sold in Saudi Arabia, or they like some other company or some other entertainment enterprise. So they're hypocritical and not criticizing them, but criticizing WWE. So I had read into it because this weird thing that they're repeating about, you know, that WWE is this cross-cultural show in every country in the world, and it's the only sports entertainment that is. I was thinking that was on Vince's mind. But I think, Vincent, you make a really good point, and I could imagine that being the root of some of the writing too. I would hope that Kofi and Xavier and Big E would take a stand if they felt that it was putting a spin on things culturally that would make them look bad for going along with it and not pushing back against it. So I kind of have to reprocess the promo through the lens that you saw it, Vincent, and think about it a little bit more. But like I said, as I was watching it live, I saw it as Vince maybe being upset about him being criticized for going to Saudi Arabia, but other companies not getting the same kind of heat.
Well, I mean, another couple of tidbits adding on to that, Jason said that Kofi's championship reign started with racial overtones, with the whole with his battle with Vince McMahon. But then also they were in Sacramento, California tonight, right?
They were in Sacramento, yeah.
Cali is known as a very liberal state, and you know, there's, you know, in the news, there's always some sort of racial violence or racial animosity going on if you read the headlines in California. So, you know, I'm just piecing together little bits of information, and that's kind of the lens that I saw that promo through.
That's why having open phone lines is good. I mean, you help us take a look at it through a different lens, and whether it was intended or not, just the optics of it can be bad too, or can rile people up or bring up topics with people that WWE doesn't even intend, and they should be aware of it. And one of the ways that you can avoid, and I'm talking in a more general sense, having three black wrestlers standing in the ring, talking about a title reign where race is part of it because of the history of WWE. And then you have three white guys standing on the stage talking about it. One of the ways you avoid getting caught saying something where signals are sent out that maybe you don't intend is to make sure you have a staff of people who come from diversified backgrounds and bring different life experience to the filtering and editing and origination of the writing of the promos and the skits. And that's something WWE should be cognizant of and work hard to make sure is part of their process. Vincent, anything else?
I did have, if I could be afforded the time, I do have a more of a meta question. It's not specifically about that SmackDown,
sure,
but it is regarding. So Bayley finished Nikki Cross with the diving elbow, which is one of her finisher/signature moves. Why is it that the talent is like they always perform their finishers or their signature moves every single time? So, I mean, when I was first introduced to wrestling in the Monday Night War era, it was WCW. And I remember, for example, Booker T, you know, one of his signature moves was the axe kick. However, I think his finisher, if I'm not mistaken, was the Harlem Hangover. It was a top rope move. I can't describe it. People could Google it if they want to. It was called the Harlem Hangover. And he didn't perform the move all the time. You know, he'd perform it. He would try to finish it. Let's say it was a highly contested match on Nitro. He would go to the top rope, perform the move. Or it was a pay-per-view match. He would go to the top rope, perform that move. We didn't see it all the time. Billy Kidman, his finisher was a shooting star press. We didn't see it all the time. But, like, the wrestlers in WWE now, they perform or they try to perform their finishers all the time. Like, I feel like you don't have to go for the move. All, like, there's other moves
yeah,
you can
yeah.
finish your opponent with.
No, I think it leads to predictability, Jake, if, you know, matches only end with the finisher and not a secondary move. Or in the, I think we're ignoring how 2/3 of WWE matches end, which is with somebody at ringside distracting someone leading to a roll-up or a finish. There is a predictability to too many of the matches. Jake, your take.
Yeah, in this particular case, I think they had Bayley use the elbow because it allowed her to, like, stare down Alexa throughout the entire process. So, like, she positioned herself on the turnbuckle opposite of where Alexa was standing, you know, on the outside of the ring, and she stared her down as she delivered the move and gave the pin. So I think that was what the visual that they were going for in this particular case. But I think absolutely, you know, your premise is correct. They've conditioned people at this point to wait for finishers, you know, to depend on the conclusion of a match, especially in big match situations. And they usually, you know, get around having the finisher be a conclusion to the match by having people have to hit multiple versions of it or hit it multiple times in order to generate the near fall that make those main event matches exciting. And I think they could introduce some variety into the show by having people finish matches in different ways and in more clever ways. I think it just comes down to them being obsessed with branding and wanting to make sure that everybody has something signature that fans are anticipating.
All right, cool. Good discussion, Vincent. Appreciate your call.
Thank you, and go VIP.
Thanks. PWTorchVIPinfo.com. PWTorchVIPinfo.com. If you're interested in being a VIP member, $99 gets you a whole year. You don't have to think about it again. Plunk down $99 now. Get a year of this show ad-free. All the daily casts, all the Wade Keller post shows and podcasts, plus around a dozen VIP exclusive podcasts per week, including post pay-per-view roundtables, 30 plus years of archives of audio, retro radio shows, podcasts, post pay-per-view roundtables dating back to 2004, and Pro Wrestling Torch newsletters dating back to the late 1980s. So it's a good deal. Think you'll love it. And our listeners who call in endorse it, as do our emailers. So check it out. PWTorchVIPinfo.com. All right. 860. You are up. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, wait, hey, Jake. This is Jay in Hartford.
Hey, Jay. Good to hear from you. Well, what's on your mind about SmackDown?
Hey, same you.
Yeah.
Hey, so before I get.
Oh, hold on. That was my fault. Go ahead. I accidentally hit the wrong button. Go ahead, Jay.
No problem. So before I get to my point, just on what the previous caller said, something a little interesting that I noticed or that happened in my house tonight. So my wife is, I'd call her maybe just a little less than a casual fan. You know, she knows about the storylines because she's in the house when I'm watching it.
yeah.
You know, she's a Becky fan or whatever. So I'm in the kitchen tonight watching SmackDown on my phone while I'm eating, and she's like at the stove busy doing something. And all of a sudden, and this is during the New Day segment, and all of a sudden she goes, why do they always do that? And I'm like, do what? You know, and she says, she basically, and I can't really say exactly what it was that she noticed, but to Vincent's point, the previous caller, she's like, there always seems to be some undertones. She's like, it sounds like they're talking about a black and white thing. And I'm like, what do you mean? So at the time it was when Kofi, and again, Wade, I apologize. I don't remember exactly what they were saying, but Kofi was, you know, defending his stance as champion or complaining about something. And then Dolph's like, oh, but it's your fault. And it's just kind of like what you see in the news where sometimes you get that, you know, where, not to get too racial, but, you know, white America may be saying, hey, black America, you complain, but it's your fault. You know, so that's kind of the vibe that she got. And I didn't even get that vibe, to be honest. But I thought it was interesting when the previous caller just called in to say, you know, what he noticed. I'm thinking, wow, my casual fan wife, who was busy at the stove, got like the same, you know, the same thing. And I'm like, I just thought that was very interesting. So I guess it was there. We didn't all notice it, but some people got that impression. So
I think once New Day started talking about butt meat, I think our brains just turned to mush and we didn't have a chance to really think about what just happened seconds earlier. You've listened to the show and you don't read like my report or Jake's report, his on ProWrestling.net beforehand, sometimes you probably should if you're not watching the show, because I say stuff like that and I'm like, do I need to like fill people in on what actually happened? By the way, I don't say this much, but like one of the things VIP members get is after I record this show, I record a full rundown of Raw and SmackDown start to finish for VIP members. So I like start at the top of the show. I read my report. I add commentary. I add analysis. I pull out the key quotes from the announcers and the wrestlers, and just it's a substitute for watching, or it's your chance to hear what I thought about the show or what I picked out that I thought it was important. That's a VIP feature, and it goes up right about the same time that this show goes up because of the editing and production process that goes into this longer show. I record that show, and that sometimes goes up first. So that's a VIP benefit. So if you're listen to the show sometimes, you're like, man, I wish I didn't have to watch SmackDown to know what they're talking about. Either check out our reports on your phone or your laptop to read the details first, or you can even listen to my hotline following Raw and SmackDown first, and then tune into this show, and you'll actually know what we're talking about. Because I can imagine someone who didn't watch the show going, did Wade just say butt meat? What is he talking about? On a more serious note, though, I'll read the quote that came before that I think is one of the focuses, because I do think Sammy is voicing – I think there's probably something to the theory. I'll put it this way. I'll put all qualifiers on it, that Sammy is the voice inside Vince McMahon's head in certain ways right now. I think he's frustrated with critics and wants to vent about them and hypocrisy. And he's one of those, you know, it's like talking to your dad or grandpa about politics and they have their oh, I just got a vent because I was watching this cable channel. So one of the quotes from Sammy is, what that tells me is that these disgusting people don't care about justice, because he said they cheered Kofi retaining the title thanks to Xavier interfering, but if he had done it, they'd be booing him and he might be fined or suspended, something along those lines. So he's saying you're hypocrites. So what that tells me is these disgusting people don't care about justice. These people have no morals. You have no ethical code. All that matters to you is who you like and who you don't like. And I think that's one of the kind of the pull-out quotes that where Sammy is standing there preaching to New Day about how fans are cheering you for doing something that if a white person did it, I'm sorry, if the heels did it, the fans would be booing them, and that's hypocritical.
And I now that you bring that up, I think that's exactly when my wife goes, yeah, why do they do that? And that's exactly what it was. I'm like sure of it.
Yeah. And it's curious booking. Jake, I want to throw to you for a second here. You can respond to anything. But in particular, it was curious how they had Kofi retain his title because Xavier interfered. And you have Byron Saxton, you know, defending it, saying, well, it was revenge. It was revenge for what happened earlier in the match. And so, you know, it was just a payback, and you can't expect him not to pay him back. And so, you know, we have Saxton defending New Day, winning by cheating, kind of undercutting a little bit Kofi's credibility against Ziggler for retaining the title, and the fans cheering it. And I didn't know what that was all about. And I'm wondering if this promo by Sammy wasn't actually in Vince's head when he booked that finish initially, or if Vince just came up with this because he saw the reaction to that finish. I'm curious.
Yeah. You know, and I guess it's one of those things where, you know, is it a meta commentary on like privilege, or is that, you know, that's probably not something that would come into Vince's head, but maybe it's just something that the audience picked up on, you know, whether or not it was intentional or not, where you have these three white characters who routinely break the rules and, you know, attack people backstage and, you know, interfere in matches and distract the referee. And, you know, they make no mention of it when it's them. But, you know, when the New Day does it, all of a sudden it's this great miscarriage of justice. And, you know, even if it wasn't intentional, if it was just, you know, heels being heels, it does all of a sudden carry this racial subtext because of who the champion is and what took place at Super Showdown. Because, when Kofi was attempting to explain that, you know, Dolph had initiated the situation because he had, you know, kicked Xavier Woods on the outside without any provocation whatsoever. You know, that's when the heels interfered and started going on their rant. And so I think, you know, if you, now that I'm starting to play back that promo in my mind, I do see what Vincent was talking about and what the caller's wife was talking about, because it's clearly there, and whether or not everybody picks up on it or not probably depends greatly on your own individual perspective.
Yeah. And your life experience and yeah, all of that. Jay, so I don't know if that's why you called or if you had another topic or if you want to follow up on that, but go ahead.
Yeah, I had a fight. That's actually not why I called. I was listening to him and I was just like, wow, so my wife was right.
But, yeah, that's really cool.
So I called about SmackDown as far as, you know, for years it's been SmackDown is the B show, you know, and I think they did a good job of kind of, I wouldn't say removing that stigma, but, you know, sort of getting away from it when it became SmackDown Live. Last week, they had Goldberg on the show. And that, to me, is probably the biggest thing I think that they've ever done in making SmackDown seem like it's equal to Raw. You know, even Taker, when he's a SmackDown guy, he'll still go to Raw for his WrestleMania promos. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like SmackDown still gets that B-show type treatment. But when Goldberg showed up last week and, you know, they got the whole Fox thing coming up, I'm like, wow, okay. They're treating SmackDown like it's equal, to use their words, equal to or greater than, you know? So, but then tonight, they began SmackDown with a graphic and the commentators telling us that they were going to have that 6-man tag. And it, my immediate thought was, so, wow, you got KO and Sammy playing like supporting cast to the number one contender on both shows. Last night they backed up Baron Corbin, and tonight it's Dolph Ziggler. And what I'm afraid of is that this wild card rule, now you kind of revert back to SmackDown being just a rehash of what you did on Monday night. You know, I mean, when they first went to SmackDown Live, and I'm sure you guys remember, the stories were, I mean, that run with AJ, SmackDown was fresh, it seemed different. You know, now with the wild card rule, Raw and SmackDown are, they're the same again. Like, I was so excited Daniel Bryan was on my screen tonight. I'm like, this feels like SmackDown. This feels different from what I watched last night. But, you know, really it's just, usually lately it's been two nights of Roman Reigns, two nights of Shane McMahon, two nights of, and I'm wondering how do they think this is, you know, making SmackDown look appealing to Fox or, you know, whatever, you know, I don't get into the business side of it that much, but SmackDown to me just seems like Raw rehash again nowadays. So what do you guys think?
Yeah. So Jake, I think the reason that we're seeing Shane and Roman, et cetera, on both shows as often as we are, is Vince feels he needs more top names, more McMahons and more Romans on both shows, because he looked at things after the Superstar Shakeup and looked at the ratings and pulled the ripcord. Or broke glass in case of emergency, I guess is the phrase that I used at the time. And so between that and, because he's thinking to himself, you know, well, can I really afford to not have some of these top stars on both shows? Raw's going to be hurt if Roman Reigns isn't on Raw anymore. And he can't afford to have Raw ratings go down anymore. It's embarrassing headlines. On pwtorch.com, you can read the breakdown of the somewhat alarming ratings for Raw last night. And yes, they were up against a big NBA championship game that could have led to the end of a series, but they've, like I said, they faced stiff competition before and not dropped below 2 million. Love and Hip Hop Atlanta beat Raw's third hour. It tied the second hour when rounding, I think without rounding, it beat it in the 18 to 49 key demo. Only Raw's first hour was atop the cable ratings in terms of that 18 to 49 demo, but it's like the second hour dropped 500,000 viewers. You know, it's a big drop off. I think in Vince's mind, he's just thinking if Roman's not on both shows, we're going to be in trouble because we've invested so much in Roman. So that plays into it. Also, I think he's thinking, let's make Raw and SmackDown more episodic. If you're into the Raw characters, you have to watch SmackDown too in order to not miss out on major storyline developments, and vice versa. If you're a SmackDown fan, now you got to watch Raw to not just play catch up on Tuesday nights. So his strategy might be, let's see if we can get Raw viewers to watch SmackDown and SmackDown viewers to watch Raw by having some but not all of the top storylines carry over. So that's my best case for how that's my best estimate of the rationale of Vince, what triggered it, and what justifies it. Jake, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Love and Hip Hop Atlanta, because I think it showcases the failure of their efforts to bring women into this, you know, into watching WWE as a whole. Because if you look at Love and Hip Hop Atlanta's ratings, like it's a very popular show with women in the prime, you know, 18 to 49 demographic. And, you know, the WWE is not capturing hardly any of those viewers. You know, that's not the audience that watches Raw. You know, the NBA game is obviously going to peel off, you know, some of, you know, the male 18 to 49 demo that they primarily target. But, you know, they've spent several years now, you know, building this women's evolution, and it's not, you know, paying dividends for them. And I think they really need to think about why that is. But, you know, just from a general programming perspective, I think what they're doing with the wild card rule and having repeat programs on Raw and SmackDown is, you know, it's just cementing the damage that they've done to both of these brands, because it's, you know, they were the best when they were different. You know, you look back to 2016 or maybe even, you know, I guess it was probably mid 2016 when they first, you know, rolled out the new brand split with the draft, or the, you know, how when they did that initial draft on Raw. And I think there was some optimism at that point about SmackDown being you know, treated as a better show. And I've covered SmackDown now for gosh almost 10 years on ProWrestling.net, and this is, you know, we are not at the bottom of the barrel in comparison to some of those shows 10 years ago. But I think it has kind of slipped into the realm of feeling like you're just watching a continuation of Raw again. And I think that's a mistake. And I think the general premise that there are silver or magic bullets for WWE's booking problems are an issue in and of themselves, because they've got, you know, it's taken years for them to book themselves into this mess. And I think it's going to take years of consistently rebuilding their characters and their shows for them to get back out of it. And I think the continual, you know, the electric chair interview and the wild cards and the 24/7 title, they're symptoms of the problem and not solutions to the problem. And which, you know, I think means they have to let's go off some fresh ideas, which they seem like they're just kind of out of these days.
Yeah. All right. Jay, anything else you want to add?
Real quick, and I'll let you go. This is it. My last point. It just reminds me, I don't know if you, had the chance to hear Bruce Pritchard give an explanation on his podcast, you know, maybe a couple months ago or recently, about why Raw seems to get more attention than SmackDown from like Vince McMahon. And his answer was, because Raw is always next. And at first I'm like, oh, that's just an excuse. It didn't make sense. But I understood it from a standpoint of, you know, he was saying, you know, after Raw, you got one day to get ready for SmackDown, whereas after SmackDown, you got another, you know, I guess 5 or 6 days before Raw again. So Raw is always next. So, you know, but it's just, you know, they have this
but SmackDown was the second show. It was a tape show. It was for a while on UPN, it was a big deal being on broadcast television compared to cable. But it's been for a long time on a secondary channel. It's and relatively recent time.
Right.
So I would say that might be a reason that something that would have happened for other reasons is more likely to continue. But it is absolutely positively an oversimplified explanation for something that has other factors that I think you know, led to it in the first place. But it's interesting because when they moved to Fridays and they moved to Fox, broadcast network, bigger deal than USA Network, more homes, more prestige, all of that. And what comes first now? If they're both live, you got SmackDown on Friday, 2 days, and then Raw. Then you have 3 days and then
That's
SmackDown.
True.
So SmackDown comes first. So in a sense, like I don't think it's good to cement that SmackDown's a B show heading into Fox, and I think they are doing that. I mean, the Firefly Funhouses don't premiere on SmackDown. They premiere on Raw, And then if you're a SmackDown viewer and a Raw viewer, you know, what do you do during that time? Well, I guess you should rewatch it because they are kind of worth rewatching. But there's all kinds of signals they're sending up. Michael Cole, the more experienced announcer, and he hosts Raw. Tom Phillips, the junior member, he hosts SmackDown. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, 2 hours versus three, on and on. So, you know, what title does Brock Lesnar chase and want? All of those things. So that perception is there. They can hit the reset button when they move to Fridays on Fox, but I don't think they should damage the SmackDown brand in the meantime. And I think they are with not having exclusivity and continuing on with things like repeating the Firefly Funhouse and having SmackDown seem like it's the follow-up to the main things that happen on Raw.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I know Raw is 3 hours, but, you know, what's the harm 1 week in waiting until Tuesday night to debut that week's Firefly Funhouse? You know what I mean? Just, like you said, just switch it up, you know? So, but that's all I have. Thanks, Wade. Thanks, Jake.
Well, thanks, Jake. Yeah, good conversation. Appreciate it.
All right, good.
All right, we'll shift now to the on-site correspondent, and we'll talk to him about what it was like in the building. And what happened before and afterwards. The dark match, by the way, was announced as Finn Balor versus Shinsuke Nakamura. So I'm curious to see how that New Japan Dream match turns out in Sacramento, California tonight. So Jake will be back with me, and we'll be by with our on-site correspondent, Sean, in just a moment.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.